Everything's against me and it's got me down. If I jumped in the river, I would probably drown. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. These shabby shoes I'm wearing all the time, they're full of holes and nails. Brother, if I stepped on a worn-out dime, I bet a nickel I could tell you if it was hell or
hell. Lemon face. Lemon face. All right.
That makes some sense.
Are you trying to confuse me, dude? What do you mean, dude? You're trying to say this is the garage. I don't see no fucking car in here, bro.
There's a bike, dude. Is that good enough?
This might have been where the garage used to be located.
God, you don't need a car when you got a motherfucking tank. Oh, yeah.
Stupid.
He really went there.
He
took that.
He took it.
Yeah. And ran with it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Who Goes There podcast, episode 229. This is Jorge.
This is Matt.
What am I doing here?
That's all.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
This is red.
So we're gonna say
oil, man.
We're gonna say fuck the intros.
Yeah.
And fuck the news today. Damn. We're gonna get right into it.
Damn.
There's a lot to get to.
We're gonna be talking about two movies tonight. 2019's Freaks and 2019's Tigers Are Not Afraid.
2017, 2018, 2019. It's all three in one.
Whatever year you watch it in, that's where it came out. Anything important that we should get to before we start the show?
I watched a couple movies I wanted to mention.
Oh, then forget that thing I just said about no intros or anything.
All quick. I watched the new Larry Fessenden directed movie, Depraved.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. It's like a reimagining of Frankenstein. But
I love reimaginings.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good one, though. It's not a horrible reimagining.
Everything's a reimagining of the original one-celled organism, bro.
Look, dude.
Dude, we're genius level
when
now.
When you get to the point where you realize
stop that every, the show,
this everything podcast is no longer for dummies.
Everything is an echo, then you've transcended, bro.
It's just a copy of a copy of a copy.
It's turtles all the way down, dude.
Yeah,
the turtles all the way down.
Oh my god, it's getting worse.
Back to Depraved.
It's really good. It's like Frankenstein.
Except
like all the parts that they use to make the Frankenstein all come with like the memories of the people that they were attached to originally.
See?
It's
recursion, dude.
It's a good joke.
It's true. And then
it's a run-on joke.
We watched Hobbs and Shaw, Fast and Furious.
Fuck yeah!
Yeah, dude, it was so tight.
It was so tight. And this is a guy that doesn't want me to watch fucking Bad Boys.
Dude,
why?
Dude, it wasn't actually tight. Movie. I just laughed my ass off.
It was tight. It was pretty damn tight.
I don't understand what your problem is with Bad Boys then.
Yeah.
Bad boys. I mean, what you gonna do?
The thing with Hobbs and Shaw is you knew exactly what you were getting. And with Bad Boys, you know exactly what you're getting. You're getting foul language, a bunch of action, and dumb one-liners.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Maybe some boobs.
What's wrong with that, dude?
I already gave my Hobbs and Shaw stuff about the
speaking deal. Of dumb action, I actually watched, I had watched it a while ago, but I rewatched. I don't know what I do with my life. I should be watching good movies and movies that will advance like my horror knowledge.
Me too, but then I watch Dread Central Presents movies.
But I watched Godzilla for the second time, King of the Monsters.
Is that the new one?
Yeah, that shit is horrible, dude.
Why did you watch it again?
Because the monster fights are fun. This. But everything else, dude, Millie Joe Bobby Billy Brown is the worst.
I have to say that the monster fights in a Godzilla movie would be key.
Right.
So that's good. That's
but
good
like,
to know.
You know the whole like the King of the Monsters thing? Dude.
Was it like a single elimination bracket style tournament?
Guess who are the real monsters, dude?
The people,
the human beings, dude. What you don't realize when you go into that movie is you think that like the monsters are the monsters.
I liked monster fights better when it was Monster Brawl.
Remember King of Monsters, the fucking arcade game?
Yeah.
That's a fucking game, dude.
Oh, that was a good game.
There's a sweet board game called Kings of Tokyo, too. Same thing, kaiju battles.
Hell yeah, dude.
Did you watch anything else besides Depraved?
Depraved?
I watched Yeah, I watched Hobbs and Shaw. I watched a Dread Central movie that I'm just not going to review because it's not in my best interest.
Wow.
And then I watched a movie called Haunt.
That's a spicy meme.
Also terrible. I thought it was a movie.
Oh, yeah, that just popped up on my feed.
I thought it was a movie that was at Telluride, and then we had a chance to get a screener. So I'm like, hey, let me get that so I don't have to worry about seeing it at Telluride.
¿Cómo se dice, no bien?
It's not at Telluride. Está no bien. Está muy mierda.
Much shit.
I watched Death to Smoochie for the first time ever.
Great film.
And okay, you know how this thing was a fucking utter failure when it came out.
Oh, dude, 100%.
Okay.
People don't recognize genius.
I have not. Well, this one completely way fucking 2002, like way ahead.
You know what else failed when it came out? The Fanatic.
Hey, The Fanatic is already.
You know what else?
The movement has begun.
The Who Goes There podcast.
Who Goes There pod. Wait, so.
Oh no!
I watched it twice.
Oh no!
I watched it twice.
Dude, you watched it twice?
Because I really liked it. And Danny DeVito, he directed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he did like Matilda and War of the Roses. I actually think, like, he's pretty well respected. Well, I guess until Death to Smoochie at the time, but I think he's kind of underrated, man.
Death to Smoochie is a fucking
director
is an amazing film, and I don't mean that in kind of like a it's amazing. It's
great.
It's really well done, and Ed Norton is just like
Edward Norton is fucking hilarious. Woo! But Robin Williams is fucking hilarious in that movie, yep. Dude. I went to the ghetto freaking swap meet in South Bay here in San Diego.
That's the best swap meet, dog.
Well, it was, and I found good stuff there, and I found Virus. Okay. Now you've mentioned Virus before because this is up your alley, and I saw it in the theater. I hadn't seen it since the theater.
Yeah.
Okay. So the movie is not a good movie.
It's not a good movie.
But
yeah.
But it has some serious fucking stuff with the practical effects and the gore.
Mm-hmm.
The mixture of gore and like fucking robotic stuff is really fucking gross.
Yep.
But did you know the budget for this movie? $75 million fucking dollars.
That's a shitload. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think you got me the comic.
Yeah, because it was based on a comic. Yeah,
like a gajillion years ago.
I think you're right. Yeah, it was based on a comic. But yeah, it's such a weird fucking little thing though. That's one of the reasons it's a cult film now. Is it's just atypical for Hollywood to throw $75 million at a super fucking gory film like that. There's not very many super gory $75 million Hollywood productions. That's a short list.
Short list.
Anyway. So, yeah. Anyway.
Cool.
Watch those two.
Algo más?
What?
What? Anything else?
Oh, yeah.
What you got?
We got you something for your birthday, dog.
Oh, is it my birthday?
Yeah.
God damn it. See, you make me feel
bad.
Yeah,
that's the whole idea, dog. You would think you would learn by now that my birthday is before
that is
yours.
The point.
So if you don't want to feel bad, you should do something for my birthday.
You make
me
feel bad because I forget.
How could you forget, dog?
No.
Look at this. Look at this cake. How could you forget, dog?
Dude, he saw Hobbs and Shaw, and he's like, how could you forget family,
he's
dog?
He's got forks. How could you forget
family? It's all about family.
Saluda mi familia.
The thing is that I forget how important your birthday is to you because it means next to nothing for me.
I know, and that's why it hurts.
Which should be the opposite of that. You should be like, oh, okay, I understand.
Nope.
Okay, well, nope. We'll hit that.
Yeah,
we That's will. Both of ours.
Okay.
Hit that. Rubicon.
Yeah, it's my birthday week.
Yeah, in like 2 days.
Ugh. Well, it's my daughter's birthday, so I'm more excited about that. We're going to take her to the sugar factory. And let her
you to the sugar
and let
factory.
Her just go fucking nuts. She's gonna do whatever she wants in there.
Is that an actual place?
The sugar factory? it's inside the theater that's downtown. Mm-hmm. The boutique theater downtown. I mean, they have these fucking like these personal bowl drinks that are like $30.
Jesus.
That are like this fucking schooner of a glass, and you just get lit up on sugary fucking drinks. I'm excited. I'm gonna have one.
Yeah. She'll have two. Type 2 diabetes.
All right, well, should we talk about Freaks?
Yes.
Man, was I disappointed by Freaks.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
Man, am I disappointed in you?
Yeah, I'm disappointed in you.
So normally we don't start with me, so I'll start with me because I suggested this movie. The first 20, 30 minutes of this movie, I'm super in. And I normally am like, well, yeah, if they had expanded the world a little bit more, like I would have been really stoked.
But
this is one of the few times where I go, they expanded it too much. They went too far. They've given me a girl that flies through the air and blows people up as she flies.
Yeah. What is wrong with that?
Nothing in terms of like the actual thing. But I was like, she's in a mountain somewhere. I don't understand what that is.
Fucking awesome.
You know, Emil Hirsch is looking rough. He's looking like Jack Black.
Like he just went into the wild?
Yeah, like he just went into the wild, killed himself.
Did you need him to have a six-pack?
Came back to life and is now like...
Got Zac Efron.
And now
you should have got DiCaprio, bro.
And now is like a paunchy corpse is kind of what he looks like. Anywho.
I did notice his body. I think it was very good, though. It's method acting. He wouldn't be fucking fit in that house, you know?
Yeah, imagine, dude, because he doesn't go out very often, so he probably gets a lot of takeout, like fast food.
That's right.
Probably doesn't get a whole lot of exercise.
Probably stops time.
I didn't see a treadmill in that house.
Or for him, like, super slow food, dude.
That's where I was going.
Yeah.
Matt Smith, what'd you think about Freaks?
I actually liked it quite a bit. I felt like this was kind of everything that Brightburn should have been.
It's a great companion piece to Brightburn.
If it would have done a little bit more of the gore that Brightburn had, but then a little bit more of the everything good that Freaks did, together they make a great movie.
So listeners, you probably haven't been able to see this movie yet because it was only in theaters for a total of 4 days.
Yeah, limited theaters.
You'll catch up with us in about probably like a week or 2 weeks, depending on how this goes, when it goes to VOD.
So it'll be a good thing that we did two movies and we timestamp now.
Yep. Dahlia? Alia?
I really liked it, too.
I did that on purpose.
I really liked it. I'm also falling asleep right now.
That's cool. Take a nap. You can curl up.
I will.
Riggedy Rhett?
You know how you said you were all in the first 20 or 30 minutes?
Yeah.
The first 20 or 30 minutes, I'm like, this better fucking go somewhere. However, I was already like, you know what? It's a movie of limited means. They've got, like, this little girl's doing good. Emil Hirsch seems to be carrying this. And once it started expanding, once it started going where it was going, I was fucking continually surprised and really impressed by its ideas.
Yeah.
And its ideas, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them didn't require a bunch of special effects. It was just, like, shit. It was just, it had idea after idea about, like, the stuff about temporality and time and then, like, remote viewing type stuff. And, I shouldn't say too much. But, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's perfect, but... I kind of like how unwieldy it is. Like it gets very ambitious.
It sort of lets go at like at the.
I would argue it's a little too ambitious. Like it did feel.
I agree.
A bunch of like threads that it was pulling all together, and it was just kind of like, well, why don't you get rid of like two or three of these and focus on these two or three?
Was really thrilling, though.
That's kind of what I meant when I feel like they expanded a little bit too far.
Yeah,
yeah, I see what you're saying.
But I do. I really enjoyed. And I think we just got to go spoilers from the
game. If they would have kind of gone the other way where they give you like a glimpse of the whole world and then it kind of focuses in on this one house, I feel like that would have played better. But
like what storyline could they have finished like that, you know? Like what answers would we have gotten?
I have to give this like ultimate props as a film because of its structure and because, meaning this is show don't tell. There was, because for a good while, I'm legitimately confused what's occurring.
Right.
Well, even
which
when I
is like that's fine, and it's like this. Okay, what's gonna happen when this explains itself? The way it explains itself is not like info dumps. It's not like here's what's going on.
It kind of comes casually in conversation.
Yeah, it comes in conversation. Yeah. It comes in interaction with the mother who's in another temporal location, and you get
Amanda Crew. Oi,
she's a pretty lady. Is that her name?
She's gorgeous. Everything she does, I'm like. Continuously impressed at how gorgeous she is.
I kind of vaguely recognize her, but I don't know what
she's been in. She was in Silicon Valley, that show, if you remember her. She was also in that movie. It's not a good movie, but it's, I think it's Road Trip, if I'm not mistaken.
Road Trip is a great movie. Amy Smart is in.
I'm gonna sit down. She may not be in Road Trip. She's in one of those like teen comedy.
What's her name?
Road trippy movies. Amanda Crew.
You ever row crew, dude? That's wow. Are you fucking rubbing my rhubarb right now, dude?
Rubbing my rhubarb? What the fuck?
Sex Drive is the movie that she's in.
Well, I like the name.
I'm not familiar with that movie.
Yeah, it's a stupid like teen
Final Destination 3. Yeah.
highbrow name.
She's great in it, and I do like all the stuff dealing with Chloe's sort of power, because she has no idea how to control it, because she doesn't see people.
Well, she doesn't even realize that she has it at first.
So, you know, she thinks that she's having hallucinations and dreams when she's actually fucking with a little girl who is her next door neighbor, which I thought when you...
Well, I wouldn't even say fucking with her. She's more like just trying to be her friend,
she's
but...
basically haunting her, though.
Yeah, I mean, but she also doesn't realize what she's doing. Like, she kind of...
But she's still doing that.
Well, she doesn't pick up on these cues. Like, to her, this is just a normal thing that, like, everybody can do, and she doesn't understand why this little girl is freaked out. And, like, you don't realize it at first, because it's like, oh, they're just friends, you know, they're just hanging out. But then when she's like, how does she know your name? You're like, well, what the fuck do you mean? Like, they were hanging out. Like,
yeah,
they were right there. And from watching the trailer, I did kind of think that the dad was maybe like a tweaker or something. He was just paranoid and none of this stuff was actually happening. He was just imagining that people were after them.
Right. My head was going a bunch of different directions, yeah. which is cool.
Well, cause I got a real, at the beginning, the reason why I was super in was, have you guys seen that movie Bug with Ashley Judd?
No, I've heard about it though.
So I got a real Bug vibe starting this movie. And I thought it would be really interesting if everything that we experienced with, you know, the, you know, being normal and being a freak or whatever, all that was manufactured in the dad's mind. That would have been an interesting movie in and of itself. And I do like,
well,
the idea that they go to sort of like a superhero thing. I'm into that kind of stuff. Especially when you come to realize, like, you know, when you find out that Emil Hirsch's character, he's got this time bubble that he's holding that house in.
Yeah, there's some really cool world building and like rules.
Yep.
That it was pretty consistent about. That's what I mean. Like, yeah, how it introduced this stuff gradually and then it stuck to its rules.
It definitely feels like one of those movies you have to watch a couple times to kind of get everything that's going on. Because there's certain stuff that doesn't make any sense and then they explain it later or it comes up later. And I just feel like if you went in knowing everything that's going on, a lot of it would make sense.
Start paying attention to the details instead of the plot.
Yeah, and exactly.
Yeah, I agree. And not all of the humor, but quite a bit of it, I thought was well-placed. Like, you know, I thought it was a good time for it.
Yeah.
Like, it flows well. Like, the stuff where the little girl is controlling the big strong guy's body.
Oh,
in the
yeah, that stuff was
that shit played
pretty,
really well.
Pretty on point. Yeah,
I thought that was really good. And when anytime he was talking to the mother as the little girl,
yeah, when he goes, "I love you, mom,"
right?
Oh yeah,
it's that funny was good shit. And it's very disorienting adorable. And it's trippy.
It was touching too. You know, like you saw all that little girl ever wanted was to be like loved and accepted. Yeah. It's always her and her dad, and she has no idea what's going on.
Right.
So that's why when she's
her and her dad, but her dad takes off. You know, like.
Yeah, he's very much like, look, I'm going to keep you alive, but that's all that I'm here to do.
Yeah. That's overprotect.
The thing about these, the thing about specifically this film that I had trouble with is that nobody wanted to treat Chloe like a person who's got infinite powers. Like, just explain to her what the fuck is going on, and 90% of this movie goes away.
Well, I mean, no. You're not wrong.
And so I have issue with both her dad not being like, hey, I understand this is really fucked up, but here's the situation.
Well,
and then the deal with her grandfather.
He didn't even want her to know about her powers.
Well, but okay.
Which true. Is an unrealistic goal.
So he didn't, I guess he didn't realize
well,
it.
Well, I mean, he felt like if he kept her sheltered from everything, then there's nothing that would set off her powers.
And he's also
right.
Kind
which
of
is
in
a
panic mode because.
Thematically, dude, that's a metaphor fucking anyway. It's a metaphor. Like people, it's freaks. They're called freaks, right? So
yeah.
your powers, it's like you don't want to demonstrate that you're different in any way, you know? So you don't want to demonstrate to the world. You want to act regular. I love this shit about sports. Like, if you mention sports, you're good.
Yeah, you're like, whatever sport is fine.
Baseball's
yeah.
my favorite.
Baseball's my favorite sport.
My favorite.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah. I mean, you know, so yeah. I think, I get what you're saying, but I don't think he didn't want her to. He wanted her to be as normal as possible and shield her.
I guess more to expand on that, I think the grandfather should have, you know, because he introduces her to a lot of stuff. Like, he's yelling at her and he's trying to elicit anger out of her.
He's trying to see if she even has powers.
And
I mean,
and once
okay,
he
but
has.
When he first came onto the screen, tell me you didn't think he was some kind of bad guy. Right. Like, because he brings her and he's like, yeah, definitely come on board my ice cream truck.
No, I thought that might all be an illusion. All of that.
Yeah, well, I didn't think it was an illusion. Like, I just thought that he was being played overly creepy to kind of, you know, suggest how paranoid and untrusting she is of people.
Right.
Like, maybe that he was just a little bit creepy, but it came across as extra creepy because that's how she sees the world.
Well, the actor.
But then he started being like a total dick. He's like, yeah, let's go to the park. And he's like, get mad, you little shit. Hey, stupid. I mean, he may not have said those things. He may have been a lot meaner.
That's why, like, Laura Dern's dead. Dude.
That's why I wonder, like, why would he? First off, why would he go to her anger as a trigger?
Probably because that's
like, was, is that like an easy emotional response imagine, to get like a child to emote?
Very many people's powers probably surface in that in that way when they're like under distress or emotional, like extreme.
Yeah, you're right. And I guess about, like the
Friday the 13th part 7
here kind of points to
Friday the 13th part 7 wrote the rule book on when powers manifest.
Right? Like they pissed. It's like she could barely move the can, and then she gets pissed off, and it's like, oh shit, here goes crashing docks. Did you
ever watch Ghost, dude? Where he's trying to move the can, dude, in the subway,
and then he like killed Willie with the window, dude. That was what, dude, Ghost? Like, that was a fucked up scene right
but
there.
But I think George, because, well, I got to yell at him.
What's that?
Okay, well, I think it manifests, he's going to the anger because it's a defense mechanism. It's an inborn defense mechanism. It's an evolutionary thing she's developed as a means of defense.
Oh, I see, yeah, so like,
just like we do anything else.
Anger and danger will bring out whatever power you have. Because
aggression fight or flight yields a reflex. Yeah, it's fight or flight response.
I can see that.
Yeah,
that makes sense. And he, like, I don't know, he was really creepy. He knew the whole time. But you don't know why he's trying to get this out of her. Like, I didn't know if he was trying, and I didn't honestly know who was the freak the whole time. I'm like, is this old guy the freak? Is Emil Hirsch the freak? Is the little girl the freak? Are they all freaks?
We come to find out that humanity is the freak.
We're all freaks to one another, dude.
Cause they just want to.
What was the thing that we said last week, where we said,
"I don't know."
Use your trauma as a weapon.
Weaponize the trauma.
Oh, yeah,
you gotta put it on a T-shirt. Subvert expectations.
Weaponize the trauma.
Transcend the genre and weaponize the trauma.
Are we fucking good?
Are we good?
I am out.
You're like, that's too much.
You know,
we're weaponizing the trauma right now, dude.
We're talking about like there being these people with mutant abilities or whatever, and humanity being the freaks. I think that's kind of a little bit of the problem with this movie, is that it just blends in with all the other movies that are like this. Because X-Men and Brightburn and probably New Mutants and all these, it's like, oh, they have powers, they're bad.
This had fucking more ideas than any of those had recently. This could almost
be like a Dark Phoenix origin story. Like, really, like with how with you have this untapped power in this little girl who is like, apparently, like as the generations go, they get stronger. So
what a great like supervillain backstory too. For
yeah, it is a fucking
imagining it into the future.
Well, that's what I'm saying. How good it is! Like, despite it's like, you know, it gets a little too big for its britches, and it overextends itself with some of its ideas too. You can see it straining to put this stuff on screen.
You think they should have made it longer and added a little more like plot? Girth?
Oh no, I'm not even saying I'm okay with it. Like I said, being kind of unwilling. I like that it's ambitious. It swings for the fences on this limited budget because I like the ideas. Yeah. And I'm invested in the characters. I was invested in the characters. The performances help. Fucking Emil Hirsch, like, despite his body image problems.
Like, hey, I say that as a person who firmly has a dad bod.
I don't want
maybe
you
to a little past that.
Maybe you shouldn't shame Emil Hirsch anymore.
From dad bod to bad bod.
He's a beautiful man.
I'm
He's
working on
a,
it.
A great father. He's economy DiCaprio, but he's still good. And I'm just kidding. That's,
you think
that's
he's budget DiCaprio?
No. I don't. I think Emil Hirsch is his own thing. However, if you had to have budget DiCaprio,
it would be Emil Hirsch.
But no, I loved Into the Wild.
Now,
okay?
What if? That's what the if they're trying?
That's the one I know.
What if they're trying to do like a sneaky franchise kind of thing here with this and Brightburn, like they did with either the Split saga or like
Glass and whatnot?
Yeah, or with Cloverfield, where like you don't know they're connected until it's
super obvious they're connected because it's two movies in the same year about kids with superhero powers.
Well, I think it's just part of the the zeitgeist, right?
Ooh.
Yeah, well, because there's a lot of superhero stuff going around. There's a lot of horror stuff going around. Both of those are good social commentary. There's a lot of xenophobia going around. There's the immigration issue. There's the hotbed, like, politically in the country. All of that's meshing together.
And so they all equate to box office dollars.
Yeah, I will say this.
Yeah, it's all relevant.
I think that the idea of marrying superhero movies and horror has been really successful and really appealing to me.
Wait, have you seen that movie, Super?
They were never
Super?
Far apart anyway. Yeah, Super's fantastic.
Super, have you seen Super, Red?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
you've got like a fucking rape scene in there, and fucking Rainn Wilson bopping some dude on the head with a wrench.
That's a big ass wrench.
That fucking movie is crazy.
Yeah, and Ellen Page.
Ellen Page. Rape dude.
That's right. Wait, remind me of the director. I'm having a mental blank. That's
Super.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
No, it's the guy who did friggin' Guardians of the Galaxy and
James Gunn.
It's James Gunn.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
It's another one on his
record. Yeah, I'm into this. I know it's low budget and whatever, but I think that in a film like this, I think you have to use your CGI sparingly. And I think that they were like, well, fuck it, we need time bubbles everywhere.
They stretched a little bit with that.
A little bit, and yeah. I don't necessarily. But fault
them for that. The ideas carried it to me.
Yeah,
yeah, but. Yeah, it would be nice.
And I could see it like taking some people like a little bit to understand that too, because it's a little disorienting when you see the powers being used.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, and then when the powers were used and she had that blood coming out of her eye, I thought that was a little cute, a little Stranger Things-y.
Yeah, but we've seen it a lot. Yeah. Stuff like that.
I mean, it's not
nosebleeds or
nose
wherever.
Nosebleeds, eyebleeds, earbleeds. Yeah. Like it's not an uncommon trope for, you know,
it was nice for sci-fi, horror, or comic book stuff. They search for the special duck that, like, their blood, like, glows. It's, like, a different color. It shines under the...
Oh, yeah, the UV light. For, like, the that true blue nice
horror fans, I would like to qualify. Usually I wouldn't do this, but for people who are just, like, fucking horror fascists, this movie is not a straight-ahead horror film. Okay, no. I'd categorize it more as a sci-fi thriller
with
some horror
elements.
Which
is part of the reason why we're doing a double feature tonight.
Yeah.
Brightburn, like... was more horror with its gore and it leaned into that. This leans into the ideas more. So yeah, definitely.
This does expand and the characters. This does expand on the universe far more than Brightburn does.
Oh sure.
Which is not necessarily a
good or bad thing.
It's not a choice. Brightburn.
Yeah.
Cool.
I can't seem to find how much the budget was for this, though.
It doesn't say, but it only made like $170,000.
Yeah, 161.
Yeah, but it'll. I think.
But I mean, considering in all of San Diego, it was playing in two theaters for like an extended weekend.
Good turnout. I mean, too, when we were there,
that's not. But yeah, when we were, Rhett and I wound up being in the same theater. You didn't even respond to that picture, dude. Here we're trying to show you, like, look, we're friends. And then nothing from you.
Said, well, this is friends. The kind of film that's built on word of mouth. Either.
Yeah, because it's like, see, when you go hang out with Bones, you guys aren't like, hey, Matt, look, we're friends. We get along. But I'm like, hey, you knew this guy. And now me and this guy are friends. Like,
he's doing the thing.
He's doing the thing that he hates, that people do.
You know what they call that?
What do they call that?
Projecting.
A hypocrite.
Ah, you a dang old hypocrite.
But if you don't admit to being one yourself, then you know what you are?
A double hypocrite.
A hypocrite.
Ah.
Oh.
Got him.
Got him.
Yeah, I mean, I'd still, you know, despite my initial sort of comments on the film, I still highly recommend it. It's real good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It kind of snuck in out of nowhere, too, and I don't know if that's because it's sci-fi or just because they didn't really believe in it, but I would like to see more of this.
I'm glad that we, Hollywood, they're streaming these days where people can see this. This is accessible, and it will, this is a film that will run on word of mouth.
I think this film has legs.
Yeah.
See, this film also had the balls to be in theaters for.
It's got balls. It's got legs, and it'll run
for 4 days. Because Three from Hell only had the balls to do 2 days.
What? Yeah, Freaks has bigger balls than Rob Zombie.
Yeah, Rob Zombie knew his movie was a piece of shit, and that's why he's like 2 days. That's all you guys get.
And then buy the Blu-ray because
because
that's how
the
we back our money.
My Dracula. Wait, never mind. I just alienated half the audience.
Right back to talk about
Vuelven. Vuelven?
Tigers are not afraid. Bye. Thought.
Be gone, mid-thought.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah, buddy.
Guess.
Somebody's stealing your trash cans,
someone's
dude.
Someone's stealing your wallet from your truck.
Oh, they might be. Yell out the window that it's in the truck.
Wallet's in the car,
it's
bro.
In the compartment, dude.
Teach him a lesson. He won't forget.
Yeah, the car's probably unlocked, too.
Probably is, dude. I don't care because what's it going to take? 2 phone calls to get all my cards back?
Fuck no, dude. Going to the DMV is a bitch.
It's not.
It is.
You go to the kiosk. You're done.
What kiosk?
What is a kiosk?
What fancy
kiosk?
Ass, what fancy ass DMV are you going
all
to?
All of them. They all have a I registered my truck the other day.
He loves it. He loves that kiosk.
2 seconds I had my truck registered.
Two seconds.
You know what, though?
You know what?
Look, I'll back you on this. Because I the registration, when I renewed it, I went right to the kiosk. I was in and out of there in 5 minutes.
You know how,
like,
they do
wow.
it in Sweden? On an iKiosk?
Why you gotta talk shit about the Swedes?
Thank
bro.
You. I'm here all week.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah, buddy.
What's up with the Patreon, dude?
Patreon.com/WhoGoesTherePodcast is full of hella tight people that want us to do this hella tight show even more. They help make us feel good when people leave us 1-star reviews.
Aww.
Sad phase. Every now and again, we'll have stuff we got to do to make the show run, like buying new computer equipment, new programs, stuff like that, web hosting, blah, blah, blah.
Games to play.
Hey, I was going to say that in the news, but we skipped the news.
You can say that now.
Anyways, where was I? Oh, yeah. So you send us a little bit of money or a lot of bit of money. And in return, you get exclusive content, bonus episodes, exclusive merchandise, and all kinds of fun stuff. So it helped me buy the DLC for Dead by Daylight, the Stranger Things DLC.
Ah. Yeah. Have you fucked with it at all?
I did. It's pretty fun. Steve screams like a little bits when he gets hooked.
That's good.
That's fun. The Demigorgon is creepy as fuck, especially when he comes out of one of his little portals.
Demigorgon?
Yeah.
Demogorgon.
No, it's 10% of a Gorgon. It's Demigorgon.
Demigorgon.
Wait, no, I guess that would be a Desigorgon.
Desigorgon, yeah. That's a math joke.
Yeah.
Got him.
There you go.
Demigorgon.
Oh, he's Italian?
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyways, go to patreon.com/WhoGoesTherePodcast and you can tell us if he's Italian or Greek or if you do Greek.
Definitely goes around like this.
Yeah.
He's Jewish.
Yeah. Oh, is he circumcised?
Shit. He's cheap.
I don't know.
I didn't see it.
Cheap and circumcised.
He does have a little bunch of weird appendages, I guess.
So the Who Goes There podcast watched Tigers Are Not Afraid as the second movie for this show. I'm going to start with Alia.
Yeah.
Alia, we're no stranger things.
Damn, you guys need to stop.
You get mad at
oh,
my Red's, fucking jokes?
Red's saying we need to stop?
My
we
jokes
must
are
be
fucking
bad.
Great.
It's no surprise.
Comparatively,
these
right? Fucking,
these puns and shit. I can't
it's no
this.
Surprise that you like this film.
I do like it.
But please.
Why? Because it's
with
Mexican?
My mom recently.
No, because and tell you right, homie.
Yeah, man, feels.
That's not what you meant, dude. You meant the political agenda, dude.
You know, it's got like, yeah, the CG is not great at moments. It's horrible
totally
at
disagree.
Moments.
No.
Jarring.
I would, okay, we'll get there.
Really?
I would say it's pretty fucking okay.
Same.
But we'll get there.
It's not like bad. I don't think it's bad, but I think I could see how people would have like an issue with it.
Mm-hmm. So you're fully on
I'm
board on, with this
Yeah,
one.
I'm on
yeah.
board.
Yeah, yeah. Riggedy Rhett.
I love it. I like it. I like it.
Hey, I'm one? So hot on this movie. I'm pretty warm on
no,
this
no,
movie.
No, 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 no. I respect this movie quite a
this
bit.
This movie's fucking great. It's okay.
Now he respects it, and then it's going to be like, you know what? Fuck this movie.
You know what? No. It's a very... It's its own thing. It's a very unique film.
Hmm.
See, now we are going down the ladder, aren't we?
Yeah, you
no,
are.
No, no, no. I didn't know a film like this could exist.
You went to Cold Store right now and you said,
I'm just, no,
I don't like
I'm
it.
I'm playing all yet. No, I liked it a lot. I've heard, this is a film I've heard a lot about. So I don't, hey, I'm not going to, that's not the film's fault. But.
Wait, what?
No, meaning I've heard a lot about the film.
Expectations are real,
a little too hypey.
Yeah. I had expectations. But then once I started tempering them and realizing, hey, just watch the fucking movie and exclude that stuff, you know, and once the whole thing set in and it sticks with you pretty well, I think, God, how do I haven't seen a movie like this, really. It tackles an issue.
Except for?
I haven't really seen a movie like this.
Except for?
Pan's Labyrinth? Yes, I can see what you're saying.
Pan's Labyrinth?
Well, because it has magical realism, and you're dealing with real-life human tragic shit. And they use, like, you know...
And I don't say that as a criticism, by
no,
the way.
No, Pan's Labyrinth is like, a fucking masterpiece. Yeah, girl.
No, I see that as a criticism.
Yeah, if you listen to any other episodes, you know that's high praise.
Anywho.
Because...
you're good?
Yeah, this big thing... They start out, 160,000 people have fucking gone missing.
And so. That's not untrue.
No, I mean, that's a huge fucking number. And under the circumstances of how they go missing, as everyone... Not everyone knows, but...
Well, and it's not...
It's not pretty.
It's not exclusively children and... Well, we can... Well, yeah, well we can
talk. There's a lot to fucking go missing. On about there.
Matt Smith?
I actually love this movie. I didn't think I was going to like it as much as I did, and I watched it by myself, and I managed to stay off my phone the whole time.
Yeah.
I was texting Alia during the movie, and I'm like...
Oh, you watched this stay off your phone. Recently?
Yeah, how's that?
Actually, that's true. I did text her. Nice. She messaged me, and I replied to her.
It's like, spill the tea on yourself.
Spiff
bathes in it.
But that's not.
Yeah, I told her, like, I texted her one time during the movie, and I'm like, whoa, this is some heavy shit. And then immediately afterwards, I'm like, this movie was great. I thought the CGI was incredible. I was surprised at how well it looked and how high their budget must have been to make this.
Which is not.
I mean, budget. CGI is expensive.
I thought the CGI was very tasteful.
Yeah.
And also, it worked to me because it's kind of surrealist, because it's not quite. It doesn't have to be super photorealistic.
They didn't stick to just CGI effects either.
No. Well, no.
So I feel very much the same. I loved this movie, but I don't know that I
get
this movie. What I mean by that is there's a lot of things that are happening on screen, and I don't know if I just didn't catch the symbolism and the meaning of them, and I specifically didn't want to go too far into like looking at other reviews and seeing what other people thought of it, because I wanted to have that not explained to me, but I wanted to discuss it more organically on the show, because I didn't want to so be like, well, I understand what the trail of blood means because blah, and I understand what the blood on the dress means because blah. I want to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
And so going into it, first off, The subtitles in this film are fucked.
Are they?
Yeah. The translation from Spanish to English is the worst.
So we went to Mexico.
Dude,
to
buy you're not the even DVD. Mexican, dude.
They didn't even have English subtitles on the DVD we got.
It's weird because some of the slang that is coming across on subtitles is not what they're saying in the dialogue. And it's almost jarring to me because I'm hearing what they're saying and reading what they're saying at the same time, and it's almost like they're...
Mexican slang is so hard to translate.
And it's difficult to translate because Mexican or Spanish slang is so, like, it's so, like, if you miss it, you've missed it. Like, it's not, like,
Spanish
one of those things...
Spanish slang would not translate well.
You mean,
either.
Like, the cuss Tio, words?
Yeah.
Not the cuss words, even. It's just, like, the way they interact. Just,
yeah.
Like,
well, the phone kept saying Tio, and I'm like, is that her uncle? That's somebody's uncle? Or, oh, that guy's name is Tio? Okay. I thought it was somebody's uncle.
So that was one of the things that I... So, as a Spanish speaker, I picked up on a lot of the sort of, like, the idiosyncratic things that the kids were talking about and dealing with. But Ronnie, who was watching it with me, was like, why the fuck did that guy just say, like, it's not gonna fit no mo? And I go, well, it's just a weird translation. Like, I don't know how to explain that without you knowing Spanish. That's one of the biggest flaws to me.
I didn't think there was anything.
Yeah,
wrong with
bad
the dialogue.
Like dub or bad sub.
It's a bad it's kind of a bad sub. Oof. Which is whatever, you know, I still, you know, I could push through that. So
a bad sub is a fixable thing.
Yeah.
Like,
is that something that just ruined your whole experience?
No, not for me. But I think that as like an English speaker that doesn't
watch out for that
doesn't understand like Spanish slang, it wouldn't come across as like visceral and
I got you take you out of the fucking movie
a little bit.
Yeah, I got you.
You know, this is dealing with a very heavy subject in Mexico currently. You know, with a lot of human trafficking and you know, drug trafficking in Mexico and whatnot. And yeah, people disappear and they get killed and they get dismembered and all of... and all of this shit. Matt's got to go take care of some business. Should we pause?
Yeah,
we'll pause.
Pause it.
Yeah, dude, so like speak Spanish or what, dude?
Speak Spanish or get out.
Español?
¿Cómo se dice tigers are not afraid? Apparently.
As somebody who has been actively not learning Spanish for 37 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
I had no problem.
Didn't bug you. All right. Okay, continuing.
Where were we? I kind of killed all the momentum.
You did a little bit. It's okay though. You've done that before. We've wrestled back.
Yeah. Let me bring this back, bro. I'm always good at realigning things.
Ah, are you?
Usually, and then not really, at all.
You're usually the one that gets mad at him for fucking not getting to the point.
We're getting momentum right now. See,
why don't you align those lips to my D, dude?
Look, here's the thing.
I don't want to just point it out every time.
There's content and there's process. And no, right stop. Now, stop. We're in process, bro.
What if we're processing the content?
I think that's what I'm talking about.
No,
that's what I'm saying. This is all momentum. Now we're having interplay. Now things are wrong. It's kinetic.
Now things are happening. Shit?
Me and Alia had really good earlier.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah?
Nice.
So, God. What the fuck?
I really wanted to talk to you guys.
The title is way better.
What is this movie about, George?
What is the movie about? So it's about a group of kids who have otherwise been displaced by...
They're orphans.
Human traffickers.
They're riffraff. In Mexico. Rats.
Street rat.
Riffraff.
I don't buy that.
If only they'd look closer.
What this is the live action Aladdin that everyone wanted to see.
Yeah.
It's like Aladdin.
I mean,
white dudes instead of Aladdin.
Shit, you're kind of not wrong.
It's like Aladdin and Pan's Labyrinth had
like three wishes and like.
Holy shit!
You're
not
wrong.
You know, on a previous episode, I said there are plenty of kids walking around in a town movies and stuff going around. This is maybe my favorite kids walking around against evil forces thing to come out this year.
I mean, they weren't just walking around. This wasn't Stand By Me or.
But it was
no, they're not.
But it was like
they're evading
like
death at every
on their
turn.
Journey. Like they have their
yeah, goal. They're evading getting goal. Killed by these drug dealers and whatnot
them?
And the cartels.
Just brothers, they just call them by their brother names.
You know what? I mean, one thing I want to mention, since we're talking about the movie,
something.
Is what? I'm sorry.
What? No, go ahead.
Oh, what do they call the
Huascas?
Yes,
Huascas. There you go.
That. The movie, like how it uses its setting. These abandoned areas and things like it almost has like an apocalyptic feel to it.
Yeah, it's got a very ghost town.
Very bleak.
Yeah.
Which is and it uses these kind of like desolate rooms and like the architecture that's like it's kind of dilapidated but then it's colorful, has a lot of good textures. I mean, is this her first film, the director?
Isa López.
Dame un momentito, por favor.
Sí.
Te digo. It is not. But this is her first, I think, horror film. She's done what looks to be like drama-ish sort of novella style.
She did her first short film in 1994, and then she's been pretty active since 2000.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the horror films. I mean, there's a few of them that they have this topical relevance. You know, horror has become kind of the go-to genre for topical stuff.
And also, like, first-time directors that have had, like, not first-time directors, but... first-time horror directors that have had experience in other areas kind of jumping ship and coming into horror.
Right. They want it with something hefty.
Yeah.
Some good thematic stuff.
And it works really well because you've got this subject matter that is very, very heavy. I mean, you know, kids being kidnapped, parents being kidnapped, you know.
Yeah. Made your mom cry, didn't it?
No.
No? I thought she said it did.
And, you know, I...
did make her sad, but...
I kind of wonder about some of the things that happen. So, like, Estrella gets, like, three wishes. Yeah. And her first wish is for her mom to come back.
Another nod to Aladdin with the three wishes.
Right. Well, so it was just her teacher that gave her those wishes.
Yeah.
Because they were talking about fairy tales in class. But when they were doing that school shooting, like... from that point, I was like, man, this is actually really fucking heavy. And then when she's leaving school... and the kids are playing like Limbo with the police tape when there's a dead body right there, like showing that this is just, they've accepted this is their life and dead bodies and police investigations mean nothing. Like, kind of some fucked up shit.
Correct me if I'm wrong. And this is kind of how I thought of it, that her three wishes were her version of escaping reality. Obviously, they weren't actual wishes. And it's her way of coping with things.
With the truth.
And from the get-go, her mother coming back, so to speak, as a ghost or a monster or whatever.
See, I missed that part completely.
Well, you can take this very literally if you want, because how people do deal with trauma generally is they
weaponize it.
They weaponize the trauma, dude. Well, again, though, I mean, Sarah, yeah. but any mode of belief, like every religion on the earth, is a way of dealing with the inevitability of death. You know, so whether you pretend to know what happens afterwards or not, or if anything happens or not, it's trying to deal with the inevitability of hey man, you're going down a tunnel here where we're all gonna fucking die, and so here, let me help you deal with this by coming up with a narrative about it.
Do you guys think that any of the spooky shit was real?
You mean like the
any of
it's real to them?
Well, no, I mean in terms of us watching the film. I mean,
I'm gonna go with yes.
Yeah.
Because that's the question. How is it real or
because,
not?
Because the dead boy.
The little one?
Yeah. He told her where they were and she just went to them.
I think it does a very clever.
Unless she just like was actually looking, or she actually figured which way.
I think you could look at it both ways. You could look at the movie and watch it as though yes, it's real. You could watch it another way as if you wanted to, and say no, this is just a poetic expression. Either way, I think what it does though is it does a clever thing there. The most horrific stuff certainly is not the supernatural stuff.
Yeah,
it's the human stuff.
Yeah.
So that's what it really creates a good here's a word, juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Where, no, but it does, because you have this supernatural stuff where it's like, okay, yeah, that's kind of spooky and that's kind of unsettling, but it pales in comparison to the fucking real shit.
It was almost filler, like the ghost where it's like, bring him to us. It's almost like, I don't care. Like, I'm more invested in this chase and
And we'd prefer that kind of scare. As human beings generally, we'd prefer being scared like that. Yeah. Than being scared by the real shit.
It's steeped in realism.
The ghost, at least you have like a level of removal from.
Yeah,
from
it's like, okay. I've never been in a room with 12 ghosts, so I can't relate.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah, and there's no responsibility in it with ghosts or something like that. It's like, oh, this is a paranormal thing. It's like, no, this is a human thing.
And responding to your question, I would assume that the supernatural stuff has to be real, because that teddy bear opened that vent, you said
you can take it or you can leave it and it still works. You can even take 50-50. Like, you can take some of it's real, some of it isn't.
Because I mean, like,
it's a matter of being flexible with your perceptions.
But there's so much stuff that points to it being real. Like, okay, the teddy bear handed her the lighter, but she could have just found the lighter and imagined. But then at the end, she sees the ghost boy, she gives him the lighter, and he goes
in. But also, like, her mom, the ghost of her mom in the very beginning and even throughout the whole thing, kind of almost sounds like conscience, you know?
Well, that's what I was thinking, too. Like, I up until the very end, I wasn't...
Like, anxiety.
You couldn't really parse out whether or not the mom, as an entity, was malevolent
or beneficial for her.
Yeah. And I think that it played really nicely with ghosts as villain, because that's not really the point. You know, the point isn't that the ghosts are spooky and they're bad. The point is that this is how she's dealing with this horrible thing that's happened to her.
There's more to the world than just
because right off the bat, you think that, like, you know, she's this girl going to school and she goes home.
Very wholesome,
She calls her mom and is like, hey, mom, I'm hungry. And at that moment, I was like, oh, there is some bigger shit happening right here that we're not, like, aware of yet.
You raise a good point, George, because it's showing that she's, regardless of being in this kind of situation and environment, she's still a child. She still has her imaginative faculties intact, right? So what she's imagining, though, is horrific stuff, you know, because she's in a bad situation. But I think a lot – it's this idea, though, again, though, that even if it's threatening supernatural stuff, the idea is that the world's – there's more going on than just the bleakness and the hopelessness of what they're faced with. It's something that – like, the last shot of the film is something I really liked, when she opens the door and she goes to that huge field and there's no buildings, there's no people.
It's open.
Yeah. And it's like, that's also reality. That's also the world. Yeah. Right outside of all our...
That's not her reality.
Well, it's not our reality. Outside of our human bullshit, like, everything else is happening.
Well, and that's what also like, gave some really strong Pan's Labyrinth vibes, because even at that moment, I was thinking maybe she had been dead the entire time. And it was just her sort of, like, her...
Trying to
manifestation of being present in the world while still trying to do some good. Because if you notice, a lot of the stuff that happens to her is sort of outworldly.
Like she's in purgatory. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And
she's trying to get out of there.
And if you remember at the end of Pan's Labyrinth.
So you mean the other kids see her as a ghost?
Maybe. And that's what I mean. Like when I wanted to talk about sort of like what you guys thought about, like, what does a blood trail mean? And, and when it hits the mom's dress, like what are we doing with that? Like, what are they trying to tell us? Because I do think that there's, like, yeah, there's a surface layer of this really terrible story of what happens to these children. And then there's the ghosty story on top of that. But I feel that there's even another layer on top of that that is like...
There's more narrative stuff there going on than
initially. Yeah, and I think that's really where this movie is. It's hitting, you know, it's firing on all cylinders that, you know, you don't have to necessarily like... Oh yeah, it's ghosts, and it's a fucking monster that's, you know, leading her to this room, and it's a teddy bear that's actually animated, and this and that. I think that I like it, in that it's almost. I think this is less a horror film and more just a straight up fantasy film.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. There's the horror stuff is very kind of sparse in this, and it's almost inconsequential. Like you could take almost all the horror stuff out and still have a complete movie.
Yeah.
Because it was mostly just her mom talking to her, saying, like, bring him to us. And it's like, I'm fucking trying, dude. I'm, like, 7 years old or 10 years old or whatever. Yeah. This guy is smart and got a gang and guns. Like, I'm trying to bring him to you. Calm the fuck down.
You know, and the way these kids deal with death, I feel is so heartbreaking. Because it feels real.
Yeah, I almost cried that there's the death of one of the kids midway through the movie. And the score was very effective.
Dude, that killed. You know, when they're trying to cover him up and warm him up, I was like, God. Like,
they're saying bye to him with the they do the art on the wall.
Yep.
And all that. Like, I really got it pretty affected. Pretty,
Yeah.
Dude, I always advocate killing kids in movies, but yo, when that one happened, I was like,
he goes, "This is one time where I take a standstill on killing
that,
kids."
Well, that was the time when I text Ollie. I was like, "Yo, they just shot that little kid. Like, this shit is heavy." Because I didn't think that was gonna happen. You know, I thought they were gonna chase him, and ultimately things were gonna be like happy in the end. And
you guys remember the house that Jack built?
I'm trying to forget it.
Well, they have that scene where the sniper thing where he snipes a kid. And all that, and Lars von Trier, I mean, it's argued that he was just doing it for pure shock value.
Oh, yeah, that was a good scene. That was, like, the best scene of the whole movie.
Right, but it's, like, the polar opposite of the idea of child murdering in this film.
Well, because like, that one was funny.
Right, like, well, that's the one you wanted to see, yeah.
This was so, like, brutal in the sense that, like, you wouldn't expect it to be that little kid.
You see the full consequences of and feeling
and he of the same. Took the full consequence of that shotgun to his fucking head. Like that was it a shotgun?
No, or was it, a pistol? It was a shot to his chest.
Was it?
It was a big ass gun though.
Yeah. I thought his head.
Man, when he gets shot, I think it really brings sort of like a razor focus to the fact that you aren't just watching a ghost movie. Like you're not just watching a spooky movie. Like I think that really catalyzes the fact that you're watching something that's real. That not necessarily like this exact situation is a thing that happens, but there's definitely kids that are fucking dying every day, you know, to situations not unlike this.
It was a real turning point tonally too.
Definitely. Yeah, every day.
Well, I mean because think about the Goonies, you know? Like the Goonies is
I was thinking of the Goonies a few minutes ago.
The Goonies, it's like all kind of fun and it's hijinksy, but like what if like that lady would have just blown one of those kids away? Like or that just, movie would have taken
or just blown a kid.
Yeah, that movie would have taken a drastic turn tonally, and that's what happened here was because there was danger that was implied, and there's all this other stuff where it's like, okay, this is a bad world, but nothing really bad has happened yet. You know, people have been abducted. But that shooting of that kid,
all
it's
off
like,
camera.
Oh, this is all fucking actually happening. This is a real thing.
Yeah.
There's real consequences to all of this.
And I think that like the love story between Estrella and El Shiny is
there one?
Yeah, I think those kids really love each other, and I think that like romantically they couldn't express it because they're still fucking children.
They're children.
But
yeah.
there's some definite like,
have you considered a career in child psychology, bro?
No, I've just raised two of them.
I always say they've been through some shit together.
And
man.
I think there's some real adult motifs happening between those two kids. That despite the fact that they don't know like what
because they've become usually you'd say parentified, but that's not the word in this case. Yeah,
they have to become their own parents.
They had to
They're
become
their own guardians.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, they've grown up quickly.
It's hard.
Specifically, the two of them are kind of the leaders and the guardians of the other gang of kids.
So, and if you're comparing it to a family unit, they become the parental figures.
And you feel like they're both like reluctant, reluctant parents because they are.
That's the dynamic in the group.
This trope of kids that are following them like with zero hesitation to back them up, and you know,
like, what do we do? As if they have answers.
Yeah,
what's even more
that's
impressive.
What I mean, the more you think about it, I thought about it gels really well in your head, like all of this stuff, you know, and even just the basic premise of it, you know. Go ahead, sorry.
What's even more impressive is that none of these kids had any acting experience before this. They took some improv classes before they started filming, but that's it.
And that's
these kids did a bang up job. Yeah,
I wanted to ask what you guys thought about that, because usually you guys are pretty fucking harsh to child actors.
No, I gotta say, man, these kids
very naturalistic.
I was quite surprised, especially El Shiny. I was thinking what a good actor he is. I'm like, damn, I wonder, this kid must have been acting for a really long time, because he does a really, I mean,
he's only six.
Yeah.
Well, and it might be one of those things where, since I don't fully understand the language, like maybe he's not a great actor and I'm just not picking up on it.
No, you got him. He was definitely the shiny one.
There's nuances. And
yeah.
I think too, I think it's easy to forget how often the director has a lot to do with the acting also, meaning like what shots they decide to keep, what takes they decide to keep. You know, how they coax their actors, especially with child actors. The director would have, I think, I wouldn't be surprised, I should say, the director probably had quite a bit to do with getting really naturalistic performances out of these kids. The editing as well.
That child in particular, El Shiny, you know, he goes through so many, you know, so many emotional hits. You know, he has to see his fucking little buddy, you know, get killed right in front of him. And you know, he has to be a tough guy to the older gang.
And he's got the
Can
the
you say
one,
his name again?
El Shiny.
He's got the one memento of his mom, and it's on the kidnapper's phone where she's already battered and bruised.
Yeah, man. This
then finding out that the video of somebody being murdered on the phone is the girl's mom. Like, I did not see that coming. I was like, oh. Fuck.
And like the emotional depth that this kid has to like not want to immediately blurt out like, hey, it's your mom on this video.
Yeah.
That he's like willing to sort of like keep that to himself and endure it because he knows like
there's
he knows
restraint.
There's
stoicism.
A huge amount of restraint on his part, and he knows like. The moment I let the cat out of this bag, it's going to go bad.
There's those adult motifs you mentioned.
Right. It's not just because he's desensitized or something. It's like, no, that's actual literal restraint.
Yeah, he's trying to
maturity.
Shield.
Well,
yeah.
It's a kind of maturity most adults don't ever
fucking
develop.
He shows his restraint
and
his maturity earlier, at the very beginning of the movie when the drunk guy's taking a piss and he takes his phone and his gun. Like, he could kill him right there, and you don't know at the beginning, but that guy is basically terrorizing the entire neighborhood this whole time and even beforehand.
Yeah.
So they could have taken out their problem from the very beginning, but he exercises that restraint, doesn't
well,
kill
yeah,
him, and then it comes, that's how all this shit kicks
you think
off.
You think he's just some punk kid, and you see him breaking down and crying, and you're like, why is this kid crying about, like, you know, not...
Suck it up, little bitch.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the feeling
you
get, right? You're like, well, what are you crying about? But then you realize that, like, yeah, this
damn,
fucking
George.
El Cuco, or whatever the fuck his name is, he's instrumental in all of them losing their parents. And so him deciding not to kill him is like a huge emotional impact for him. It's fucking crazy, dude.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And I don't want
to. It's crazy, man.
I actually don't even want to go into spoilers about something. Like, but
yeah,
I'm glad that he like doesn't ever like become a murderer. Like, kid, you know, like, he wants to, he tries, but he can't do it. Yeah. Like,
yeah, I mean, you know.
This movie actually made me feel worse about homeless kids in Mexico than actually seeing homeless kids in Mexico. I know that's a shitty thing to say, but it's like.
What provided you a story that you have to turn your back on when they're, you know, in your face?
Well, I literally have to turn my back on these kids that are coming up and asking for money
for chicle. No, I know, yeah. You know, but that's why I'm saying. Well, dude, that's.
And those kids are lucky, man. Like, the ones that are at the border slanging chicles, like, those kids are the ones that are, like,
straight up.
That have jobs.
I don't do well with that stuff. I never have. And I used to see, I mean, I'm not trying to sound like some really virtuous I just don't do well with it. Like, I used to see homeless people when I was a kid and start crying. You know, and then my parents would be like, what's wrong? And it's like, oh, he looks so nice, whoa, whoa, whoa. Because I just couldn't believe there are people fucking not, that don't have a place.
Oh, yeah.
So I've had to toughen up about things, you know, because I'm not, you can't, the world's not. But then, like, a stray cat, a stray dog, it's just like, fuck, man. Look out, it's like.
Yeah, come live with me.
Come, I've got a compound.
Yeah, yeah, well, exactly. And no.
You're like, I can spare $10 a month.
The answer is no, I need my fucking living space, you know?
Of the angel.
Well, because that's what I mean. It forces you to turn your back on it a lot of the time. You can't give it energy because you feel so powerless about it, you know? But yeah.
It's interesting that a movie like this, you know, this relatively low-budget film is able to give you such a poignant look at this world while still being kind of like a fantastical view into it, and I think that it's impressive in that it's both able to give you a good film while still being kind of like, you know, the Get Out of poor Mexican kids.
See, and it's funny that you bring up Get Out, because I was just thinking that this is how you do social commentary, where it's very much there, it's very aware what they're trying to get across, but it's not heavy handed.
I mean, also they use kids. It's like, that makes it more impactful. It's so hard. I mean, it's tougher, right? It's a wild card when you use kids.
Yeah, because, like, adults, like, a lot of the times, they made the choices that got them there. Like, not always. So it's harder to give a shit about adults, but kids, it's like, you're just there. It's just
what else can you do? Yeah, like, there's no recourse for children that are in this situation. I mean, and...
Well, that's the thing. There is the ending... And you can interpret things a variety of ways. Like you said, you can interpret it. One interpretation is she was dead the whole time if you wanted to. But people do occasionally get out of things. And I think that if there's anything that's hopeful there, it's like, because we're talking about how much restraint that kid exercises. And then I mentioned it briefly to Ollie. He's exercising a kind of restraint that a lot of adults never fucking develop, because they never have these kinds of situations.
Yeah.
Put you wouldn't have to, because there's no need for it. So in that sense, if there's anything to be gleaned from bullshit like this, it's that it has the potential to make people evolve. Like, people can evolve because of these kinds of situations.
Right, you can evolve and then in essence...
Transcend.
But
yeah, that's what
the
word's for.
I mean, I know I say that on a fucking weekly basis.
No, but that's
like,
what the ending is. She's transcended the situation.
You have to transcend and weaponize.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, that's
subvert, transcend, weaponize. Are we good?
They did all three of those things, and most of them were good.
You have to subvert your trauma. You have to transcend your trauma, and you have to weaponize your trauma.
Yeah, they weaponized literally and figuratively.
Damn. Yeah, I
she projected a fucking, you know, a little tiger to fucking open a fucking vent.
Yeah, I mean, that's
weaponizing the trauma.
Okay, speaking of tigers, there was one scene that, like, I don't know if it was intentional, but I really dug it, where it was, there was a painting of the tiger on the wall, like a spray-painted version. And Shiny was standing in front of it, and the tiger's stripes lined up almost perfectly with the stripes with the vertical stripes on his shirt.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really cool shot. I'm like, oh, it's insinuating that he is the tiger, you know, like he is the warrior. He is
the
one.
You're spot on.
Yeah, but I just thought that was a really simple but effective shot, you know.
I think that, you know, graffiti as a vehicle for you know, some sort of narrative device in this film is super well done, and
super well done.
Super well done.
Yeah, it fits too, right? Like, it fits. They're on the street. The whole movie takes place among these slums, like these like dystopian looking abandoned buildings.
Yeah, it's like
they mentioned. They mentioned in the very beginning that people are just like up and leaving the neighborhoods because they become so violent.
You know? They become literal ghost towns.
They show her neighbors like just saying bye to her. They're like, they know her mom's not. She's like an orphan kid, and they're just like, well, good luck, kid. Bye.
That's what I mean. Like, it's like, it's like how eerie. It's like it's literally eerie. They are ghost towns. Like, people have left. People have died there.
Yeah.
It's fucking,
and
I mean,
and you know, and how crazies. Bleak is the idea of, you know, this poor girl whose mom gets abducted, and then she's got to just live by herself. Like, fuck.
Dude. Nobody helps her. Nobody fucking shows up at her house like, hey, do you want some fucking fruitcake? Like, are you hungry,
you
kid?
Want some cocktail? Fruit?
do you want some cocktail? What?
Fruit.
All right.
But when they showed her mom and she had that fucking bag over her head or the plastic, holy shit, that was that was gnarls.
And look, it, you know, if you've seen the news in the last decade, you know that the cartels are doing some fucked up thing in you know, in cities like Juarez, and you know, Tijuana's no stranger to this kind of stuff. I mean, it's fucked, man. And if it takes kind of a silly movie, I don't want to insinuate that the movie is silly, but I mean, in terms of like a horror movie that is going to take people to wake up to this sort of thing, then so fucking be it, man, because there is some serious shit happening in Mexico.
Oh, look at these kids. Yeah, they're so cute.
They're also little and so cute.
Yeah.
These little ones.
Take anything, any way.
So anywho, man, yeah, I mean, this is a huge movie.
This is a Shudder exclusive, right? So it's available on Shudder now.
I think there's a good chance this ends up in my top five. I mean, unless there's something else that blows me away.
Have you seen The Fanatic, bro?
Yeah. Oh, that is definitely in my top five. top five, bottom five.
Hold the fuck on.
Wait, Us came out this
we
year,
we have
too.
To make a decision. That's right. Are you actually... Okay, look it. I'm going to be a stickler here about what? This.
That shit was scary.
I love The Fanatic more than fucking anyone. Yeah. Okay? Uh-huh. Okay?
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do. Fuck you, dude. You don't even like bad movies.
I'll fight you.
I will actually fight you.
You're not autistic. I am. You don't like bad movies. I do. You're a fucking dick writer, okay?
Bro, I like worse movies than you, bro.
Yeah, you're not. I'm way more indie bad than you.
Hey, who watched Thanksgiving first, dude?
Thanksgiving? Are you serious?
Hey, yeah.
Hey, who owns Thanksgiving, dude?
Well, only because I don't own any physical.
Who told both of you about Thanksgiving, dude?
No, all right, let me get back on track because I'm exaggerating. All of you guys. Here. But okay, are you actually? Can we just put The Fanatic in its own category for year end, so it's not
you mean
in
best of?
Yeah, best of, worst of. Yeah.
I'm not putting it in best or worst of. It's
well,
The Fanatic.
Then you clearly don't love it.
Because it transcends the binary thing. It's,
like,
it's,
not
it's
even,
The
it's
Fanatic.
Not even trying to movie.
It's not good or bad. It's The Fanatic.
It's both.
I got Ollie
right,
to watch
so
it.
Good and bad. So I could put it as number one in both categories.
No, you could.
Exactly.
But I don't want to do that. I'm just giving it its own thing so
look,
I have
dude,
five
look,
spots
look,
left.
Look, it's your list.
Okay.
You do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I'll say it right now. The Fanatic is in its own
but
fucking
if The Fanatic
realm.
Ends up as like the favorite and the
dude,
worst movie
you
of
can't
the
do that.
Loser podcast.
Oh, but...
Ineligible.
That is so cheap. You might as well put it in its own category.
Last
then.
I checked,
she gets
what I'm saying.
Pointless.
Last
it's
I
like,
checked, we've been doing
might as
whatever
well make
we
it
want
a top four
for
list.
6.5 years now.
Yeah, well, you, might it's, as well make it's, a top it's four bound list. For to be
we,
subverted.
You know, we might have to make it a top four list because we'll just put The Fanatic at number one on both lists.
Yeah,
there you go.
Why don't you just do that right now? We'll just say that right now and then leave it off the list.
Hey, Doug, I don't like jumping to conclusions. There's still a lot of year left.
It's number one. It's number one.
We haven't even entered October yet.
It's number one of all lists.
Not that much year left. That
I mean, like,
no, there's a lot of shit coming out.
Three from Hell could easily wind up as my worst movie.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Hell House LLC Part 3 could end up on
worst.
Either list.
Yeah.
So there's
it,
time.
It might
hell fucking no, not with La Llorona and shit like that.
Oh yeah, La Llorona.
Was
La Llorona this year?
Hell yeah, it was. Esquedit Room, don't forget.
Esquedit Room.
It's still
shit.
Maybe worse.
We've watched a lot of
dude,
movies.
Esquedit Room was tight.
I wanted to do kind
of
like a scorecard thing,
yeah.
By the
at
way.
At least Esquedit Room was kind of fun.
I had fun
but
with
it's
it.
Still fucking it's not as It Chapter 2 is better than a Skedet Room.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's subjective.
That's, you're like,
of course it's, that's why, like, I said opinion, it, because, man, I'm speaking for me. Like, what the, of course you're, it's subjective. You're
speaking very
much. It was less annoying.
He's speaking very broadly.
In, here, about, let me say, every time I talk, in my opinion.
You might,
in my
opinion. You might want to check your bad movie privilege, dude.
Oh, God. That's not good.
Yeah, he just, dude, he just, like, I'm the bad movie.
Yeah, I'm the bad movie guy. I am. And it's like, we already have a bad movie guy.
That was hyperbole.
Have you seen Fear Sarcophagus? I bet you haven't.
I'll put your esophagus in a sarcophagus.
Oh. He should be a rapper,
got
dude.
Him.
A got rap, him.
I got that from MC a rapper. MC
Mr. Clean.
Yeah.
It's MC Mr. Clean. It's double time.
No, but there is a shitload of horror movies coming out.
All right, dude,
should just be Mr. Clean for Halloween.
For Halloween, Mr. Clean. No, dude, you have to be fucking Moose.
You said you wanted to have the show funded. Yeah. I'll fucking do that.
Yeah, because it's
the why best, wouldn't I do that?
The best movie of the year.
Well, see, are you guys doing it? No, you're not. See? See what I'm saying?
We could all do it.
Could we all be Moose?
No, literally, you would, no one he, has
you
to
would be
dead.
Like if Jack Black was in the movie.
You don't get to act like you're autistic all of a sudden, dude. Okay? You can't do what? This.
This is America. I'll act however I want.
Are you saying we're appropriating autism?
Yeah, yeah. It's because that's what I'm doing. But see, so you see what I'm saying? You don't get to just come on here and offend you, an look, actual autistic person look, like myself.
Look, you can't just come
only
in here.
John Travolta can do it?
Yeah. Well, he can do it, but...
Because he's got a son who's autistic.
He right. had a son that was autistic.
Oh! I All right, mean, that's the Who Goes There podcast for episode 229. We'll see you next week when we talk about, I don't know, freaks.
Freaks.
Yeah, you're talking just about. Talked about
I'm just freaks. Saying, I don't know. Who knows?
Villains. Dude,
there's
villains.
A film coming out we called
should,
Villains.
We should play Freaks by Broken Side for the intro.
No,
song.
No,
Freak
no.
on a Leash. You should cover it. Never mind.
Should cover it.
All right, we'll see you next time,
we
dummies.
We will find something really cool.
This is Jorge signing out.
Let's get it.
Let's get it.
You haven't said that.
Good evening.
Let's change that.
Bye.
Right now.
Let's get it.
You're all gonna fucking die.
I'm not gonna worry wrinkles in my brow. Nothing's ever gonna be alright, no how. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive.